Okay. This meeting, this month, we've been focusing on the fourth step. And so this final week of the month, we've made our way to the sex inventory and sex ideal and harms inventory. I probably should have said this every week, but I'm just another damn bozo on the bus. One thing I know for sure is I don't know shit. Okay, so all I'm going to do is share some of my own experience and some of the things that I was taught by other people. So if we're talking about sex and the sex inventory, we're going to start on page 96. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. Golly, man, nobody sees that as funny. Actually, it's back on 68 and 69, not 96. That's 13th step stuff right there. Going back to 68. I was just kidding. Okay. Anybody paying attention yet?
No.
All right. Bottom of page 60. Bottom of page 68. Final paragraph. We just came through the fear inventory. It's important when you start looking at what we're going to look at next to look just a couple of paragraphs ahead. Perhaps there's a better way to live. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are here in the world to play the role that He assigns, just to the extent that we would do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity to serenity. I don't think it's any mistake that this right here comes right before when it talks about sex and harms inventory and designing an ideal for the future. Bottom paragraph. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling here, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's easy to get way off track. Here we find humans' opinions run to the extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the races are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or there's not the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man to have no flavor for his fare at all, and the other would have us on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we did. So I take from this paragraph, what I was taught about this paragraph, is the sexual inventory in and of itself is not about the picnic. Okay, the act of actual sexual conduct is the picnic of the whole freaking the party. The party's in the journey in the whole thing. And what it is, it's about the way that I treat other people. This inventory, I was taught, it's just as much a harms inventory as it is a sex inventory. It's a conduct inventory. It's about my behavior towards other people and how I need to have a different behavior going forward than I've had so far. I've had the opportunity in my inventory to look at my behavior, and by this point, I should be disgusted by it. So take this next paragraph here in the middle of page 69 and look at it independently and forget that we're talking about sex. And remember, we're talking about the way we treat other people. Okay, this goes beyond just relationships with a man and a woman or a man and a significant other. We reviewed our conduct. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. And there's several questions here. Where have we been selfish? Where have we been dishonest? Where have we been inconsiderate? Who had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy? Did we unjustifiably arouse suspicion? Did we unjustifiably arouse bitterness? Where were we at fault, and what should we have done instead? We got all this down on paper and we looked at it. This one paragraph leaves me with not only a list of people that I've hurt, that wrongs that I need to right, which is for the eighth step and the ninth step, it also leaves me the questions. What have I done? What did I do wrong? What should I have done instead? Those are my character defects and shortcomings in step 6 and 7. This one paragraph shapes the 6th and 7th step and the 7th and 8th step. Just the questions right here in this paragraph formulate the rest of the house cleaning process. Okay? In this way, we tried to shape. This is now shifting into an ideal for my future relationships. Whether or not I'm going to come out of this wanting to be involved in a monogamous relationship, or if I just want to forget about relationships at all. There's a lot of latitude here to go whatever way I want, but it's focused on including God in the whole deal. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relationship to this test. Was it selfish or not? At this point, I'm looking back and I'm beginning to look forward. We asked God to mold our ideals to help us live up to them. We remembered that our sex powers were God-given and were therefore good, neither to be used lightly nor selfishly, nor to be disposed or loathed. I believe God knows how good sex was. I think He made it that way on purpose. In a lot of ways, when you think about it, it's really kind of silly. You know what I mean? If it wasn't any fun, we probably wouldn't do it at all. You know, and it was necessary for procreation. So it's important to understand that as far as God goes, that sex is like it is for a reason. The actual picnic is like it is for a reason. But whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in doing so. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. We're talking about in the inventory, the causes and conditions of why I feel like I feel, why I act like I act, and hopefully getting to the point where I want to behave and have a different life going forward. In meditation, and remember, meditation in the big book is talking about considering my future plans. Considering my future plans, I ask God what I should do about each specific matter. The answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that in some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean we're going to drink? Some of us think so, but that's only a half truth. It depends upon us and upon our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have an honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe that we will be forgiven and we have learned a lesson. If we're not sorry, our conduct continues to harm others. We're quite sure we're going to drink. We're not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. Now I'm going to go back to page 50 because from my perspective and looking back at my life and my relationship with my wife, the most important aspect of that relationship begins with each of our individual relationship with God, higher power, however you want to frame it and live with it. Going to back to page 50, in our personal stories, this is the second paragraph, in our personal stories you'll find a wide variation the way each teller approaches and conceives of a power which is greater than himself. Whether we agree with a particular approach or conception seems to make little difference. A particular approach or perception, I was told that's talking about organized religion and organized thought. this is a spiritual program. It's not a program that spells out a particular approach or conception. It leaves that open for individuals to go their own way in that regard. Experience has taught us that these matters are about which, for our purpose, we need not be worried. They are questions for each individual to settle. But on one proposition, these men and women, talking about the first 100, strikingly agree. Each one of them has gained access to and believes in a power greater than himself. This power has in each case accomplished the miraculous, the human impossible. As the celebrated American, let's look at the record, okay? Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. Worldly, okay? We didn't all come from the church picnic, okay? These alcoholics were worldly people. They flatly declare that since they've come to believe in a power greater than themselves and to take a certain attitude towards that power and to do certain simple things, there have been revolutionary changes in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of their human resources, they found they had a new power, new peace, new happiness, and new sense of direction flow into them. This happened as soon as they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. Those requirements: trust God, clean house, and help others. Once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, they showed their underlying reasons why they were making a heavy going of life. Leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show us how the changes have come over them. When many hundreds of people are able to say the consciousness of the presence of God today is the most important facts in our lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. So, I believe that in my relationship with my wife, that how my relationship with God and her relationship with God. So this brings me to the importance of not only picking the right person that you want to spend your life with, if that's the way you want to live your life, okay? The important part is picking, but when we get to the point about talking about the sexual ideal, the important part is before I pick somebody, if I'm not already in a relationship, before I wind up with somebody, I need to be the type of person that I want to be with. The sexual ideal is not about finding somebody that suits me. It's about being the type of person that I want to interact with. Because if I'm not, okay, if I'm not well, I'm not going to attract somebody else that's well. Okay, if I'm damaged, I'm gonna probably wind up with somebody who likes to be with and fix damaged people. Okay, one of the things that I believe, and I'll mention a little bit about my life. I got sober in January of 1984. My first date with my wife was a little over a year later. In Cinco de Mayo, or May the 4th actually, in 1985, so I was a little over a year sober. I met her in church. She's a Christian. She had a little girl that was 3 years old when I met her. We were married 95 days later in the church that we both were raised. Okay, her family and my family and all these common, there was a common big family there. We weren't two strangers. She's 5 years younger than me, so we didn't grow up in the same circle, but her brother was my age. He knew me well, we knew each other, our families, all this interaction. So 95 days later, we have this big wedding, and now I'm a year and a half sober, I'm married and got a child, which was fine with me. I had had a relationship with someone else before that had a daughter. I didn't mind being in that situation at all. So I wound up with someone who suited. But one of the important parts about our relationship, I believe, is that neither one of us are dependent on the other. She's her own person. She can get by just fine without me. I can get by just fine without her. What that means is neither one of us need, if I'm sitting down and I'm looking at my spouse and I've got a long list of things that need to be fixed with them, I've got a serious problem. Okay, I'm in the wrong relationship. I'm looking at I have one decision in my life with another person. Do I want to be with them? If they're the kind of person that I want to be with, then I need to focus on my behavior and my actions. Okay, and importantly, my expectations. What are my expectations of her? You know, one of the turning points in my relationship with my wife, it's a couple of things, but at one point I came to the decision that it was very important in our relationship that I take away from myself permission to be angry with her for her actions. Okay, that's kind of stepping back and saying, I'm not God. Okay, I'm not the arbiter of her behavior. It's not up to her as a human being to do everything the way I think she should do it. And I took away my right to get angry with her. That made such a big change in our relationship because suddenly I'm able to look by and let her be herself. And here's the another little secret. When I have a relationship with God that I take into a relationship with another person, okay, and we learn to interact and grow together in a constructive fashion, that will boil out into my relationship with other people. That will boil out into our relationship in the community. And I take that same behavior, okay? I don't get pissed off if a crackhead steals something from my car that I left unlocked, because they're a crackhead. That's what they're going to do. Okay, I stop being angry at people for their behavior. That takes me away from outside circumstances affecting my serenity. Okay, another little thing that I'll share with you that I started doing, and it was funny because I got away with it. It worked really, really well for almost a year. Okay, and here's what I would do. On a regular basis, I would go to my wife and I would ask her in different ways, is there anything I can do for you right now? What can I do for you right now? Okay, and like I said, I got away with this for like a year. Okay, and then one day I ask her that question. She says, I know what you're up to. Okay, so I'm going to move to this this document here, this My Sex Ideal. Now, this isn't my sex ideal. This is a document that I was led to by one of my teachers. And although I did go in and make some changes to it before I printed it and put it on the website that I maintain. Number one, a true partner. Someone that is spiritually awake and actively seeking spiritual growth. Someone to share equally with in the responsibilities of life. Neither partner feels or is taken advantage of. And that's a little bit what I was talking about a while ago, that we're not dependent on each other, but we can operate as a team. And we can grow together. You know, that spiritual growth for me is important, and it's important that the person I'm with is in the same state of mind. An intimate relationship, someone who can see into me, my dark side and my light side, someone who I can take emotional risks with and let them in behind the wall I put up and not abandon me, somebody totally accepting the good and bad without expectation of change. If change comes, it comes from God. And remember, these are things that I need to strive to live towards. They're not what I expect from her. There's a way I need to live. And number two is like a spiritual merger. Actually, one and two are kind of like house cleaning steps and growth steps. Number three, a monogamous relationship, sexually and spiritually, where I grow reverence and respect for our love and commitment, demonstrate that my mate is number one in my life, honor and cherishment. And at this point, I'll tell you that from my experience, a quality relationship with another person is one of the best parts about being on this planet. Okay, there's really nothing that compares to it. It's really a fabulous part of life. I'll quote one of my cousins, he was married to the same woman. I don't know if it's three times or four times that they got divorced and remarried. And his famous quote was, "When it's good, it's good. When it's bad, it's hell." Number four, someone with whom I am free to be truthful. I'm not afraid to be honest, and that includes both omission and commission. That's talking about open communication. Number five, my lover, open, honest sex, fantasy realization through caring exploration of our sexual natures. The true goal is pleasure for each other through sexual means to enhance intimacy where two people do become one, and that's an amorous joining. Number six, fair play, total commitment toward harmony through fair, expedient compromise, using the rules to keep our disagreements within bounds, and an open commitment to a quick and fair resolution to restore harmony in our relationship. Trust me when I tell you, my wife and I do not agree on everything. And a lot of things we disagree, it's like, okay, and we have to talk about it, we have to come to compromises. One example, there was a property that I came across in Tampa. It was close to where we already had a house. We needed something to grow our business. I saw this property the first time. We looked at it, we talked to the owner, we got a price. From the first day I saw that property until the day that we closed on it and bought it, 5 years went by, okay? And the discussion and compromise and everything that went on between me and my, it's a good example of can you imagine 5 years of, you know, in the back of my mind, God's telling me this is the direction we need to go, but at the same time, I'm getting resistance, not only from her, but from my own. There's a lot of details to it, but there's so many examples of that. When we shopped for our first house, we bought all these different things where you're working together to wind up in the same thing. Okay, number seven, safe and loving, nurturing home for parenting, emotionally stable, filled with love and self-sacrifice for the good of the family. Remember, like I said before, I pointed out when we were talking about the segments of self and what's important to men and what's important to women. For women, what's very important is security. And it's the same thing when you're dealing with children. Children need to be safe, feel safe in their own home. I remember when I was growing up with the corporal punishment, I didn't feel safe in my own home, okay? I didn't understand, too, that I wouldn't get as many spankings if I did what I was freaking told, but that's another topic, okay? But number seven is about no drama, okay? Living life together as a couple and a family without all the drama that goes along with a lot of households. Number eight, a balanced relationship, work and play balance, spending and saving balanced, home and travel balanced, money's not my God, love and family are paramount. And I'll be the first to tell you, when we did the role-playing thing that we're talking about levels of self the other day, and we're talking about the business owner and the AA person taking away from the time with the wife, I'll fully admit that I spent a lot of time where I was gone most of the time running the business and building the business and trying to bring in money for the family. And I wasn't present for a long time. When we bought the house up here on the lake, my wife and kids would come up here, I'd be back in town, you know, working, you know. So it's important to balance out our activities and our relationship. Love and family is the most important. Number nine, a relationship which nurtures couplehood, not just parenthood, so that when the nest is empty, our relationship just moves to the next chapter and not starts again. And that's where we're at now. Our kids are all grown. It's just us in our house. And let me tell you, life, I never expected that life would keep getting so much better, okay, in sobriety and life. I never expected that life would keep getting better. And we need to focus on us the entire time we're going through our life. Number 10, someone to grow with mentally, spiritually, and sexually. non-judgmental support for the betterment of individuals, which betters the couplehood. And that's about the right type of judgment. Won't get into that. Number 11, someone who will share our combined vision of the future, our lives to come, with whom I can strive to reach a mutual goal of serene old age, where we look back on happiness in the journey, not as the finishing line. That's kind of living in the now. Number 12, my number one fan, supporter, confidant, best friend, lover, spouse, wife, mother, companion, hero, where we revere each other through sacrifice and love to become one, and that one we become can give back and help others, including our kids, the program, society, and church, where our lives can be an example of the program which helps others find happiness and love. And I know a lot of people won't like to hear this, and I don't even like sharing it, because it's almost like a lot of ways, it's a two-edged sword, because in a way it makes me seem like that I'm kind of henpecked and I'm kind of under her thumb, but it's not like that at all. I understand the importance in living this way of life of being of service to other people, okay? On a daily basis, I get up and make breakfast for my wife, okay? I'm not afraid to wash the dishes. She washes the dishes a lot of times. If she doesn't, I will. I'm not afraid to clean the house. I do all the cooking, okay? I work a full-time job. She works right now. She's working 6 days a week, okay? I won't bother going through all the things that I go out of my way to do to make things easier on her. Because here's a dirty little secret about a relationship, okay? This is a part of my life where I get to do things for me, okay? Because everything I do to make her life easier makes my life better, okay? And with that, I am done. It's your meeting. Who wants to chime in first?